Palestine and the people of Palestine are not going away. They are not going anywhere, despite the best efforts of the current leaders of Israel to erase them from the surface of the earth.
Welcome to the What Matters Today podcast from the Geneva Graduate Institute. I'm Dan Graham, head of communications at the Institute. In this podcast series, we ask members of our faculty to comment on key global issues. In this episode, we dive into one of the most complex and debated issues in international law, the recognition of the state of Palestine. What is Palestine's current status at the United Nations? Does it meet the legal criteria for statehood? And what would recognition by countries like France mean for its future on the global stage? We'll unpack these questions and more, looking at the legal foundations, political implications, and whether recognition could help advance peace efforts in the region. My guest today is Fouad Zabiev, professor of international law and faculty associate at the Global Governance Center here at the Geneva Graduate Institute. Fouad, thank you very much for joining us on this episode of What Matters Today. My first question is, what is the current status of the Palestinian territories at the UN?
If I may, I will start by providing some historical background before answering this question. So Palestine was, before the First World War, part of the Ottoman Empire. And after the First World War, it was placed under what was called Class A mandate by the League of Nations. And that mandate was entrusted to the Great Britain. Now, after the Second World War, United Kingdom made its intention clear that it would evacuate the territory Palestine under its mandate. And what happened was the General Assembly of the United Nations adopted a very important resolution, Resolution 181, on the future government of Palestine. And it contained the famous plan of partition that we talk a lot these days. So partition of the territory between two independent states, that was the plan, one Arab and the other Jewish. And it also provided for the creation of a special status for the city of Jerusalem. Now, that plan was accepted by the Jewish population. The Arab population and Arab countries rejected that plan because they thought that it was unbalanced. Now, in May 1948, when Israel proclaimed its independence, it is interesting that that proclamation made reference to the General Assembly Resolution 181, so that partition plan. And when it was admitted the following year in 1949 to the United Nations by the UN General Assembly, UN General Assembly also referred to the resolution and recalled that Israel itself issued that declaration in respect of that resolution. Now, after the proclamation of independence, a war broke between Israel and several neighboring Arab states. And an armistice was concluded in 1949, and a demarcation line was established between Israel and Arab forces. It is called the Green Line today, right? Now, in 1967, a new armed conflict broke out between Israel on one hand and Egypt, Syria, and Jordan on the other hand. And when the hostilities ended, Israel actually came into possession of all territories beyond the Green Line that were placed during the League of Nations under the mandate of the Great Britain. So basically, it occupied those territories. Now, what is important is we know it's a matter of historical fact. So since 1967, from that date onwards, Israel has taken a series of measures basically to establish or support settlements in occupied territories, all sorts of legislative and administrative measures to change the status of the occupied territories, including the status of the East Jerusalem. Now, what is interesting is that as a matter of international law, all those measures are null and void and invalid. And it's not just me saying it. It's a matter of the UN Security Council right. and UN General Assembly repeatedly emphasizing that those territories, because they were occupied and because there is a principle of international law saying that acquisition of territory as a result of military conquest and war is prohibited, those measures are null and void. So the status of those territories, basically, even though several decades have passed, it doesn't matter for the purpose of international law, they remain Palestinian territories.
And does Palestine meet the internationally accepted criteria for statehood international law?
There are some criteria in international law that an entity must satisfy to qualify as a state, and those criteria are relatively well established. International lawyers will say that they are custom international law rules. Now, those rules are established, or those criteria are well established in case law and in state practice as well. I can give you some examples. For instance, there is a very well-known arbitral award that goes back to 1929 in a case titled Deutsche Continental Gas Gesellschaft versus Polish State, where the arbitral tribunal said that a state does not exist unless it fulfills the conditions of possessing a territory, a people inhabiting that territory, and a public power which is exercised over the people and the territory. There is a very well-known international law instrument that was entered into among the American states in 1933, Montevideo Convention on the Rights of and Duties of the States. And it says in its Article 1 that a state should possess the following qualifications, and there is a list: a permanent population, a defined territory, government, and capacity to enter into relations with the other states. More recently, the arbitral commission that was created by the European Community in the context of the collapse of the former Yugoslavia also came up with some conditions. There is no surprise there. So state is described as a community which consists of a territory and population subject to an organized political authority and is characterized by sovereignty. Now, does Palestine meet these criteria? Now, I assume nobody would deny that Palestine has population. Palestine has a territory. What is sometimes challenged or questioned is whether Palestinian Authority has effective control over the territory in question, because I mentioned earlier one criterion refers to government and public power, right? So is it the case that the Palestinian Authority exercises effective control over that territory? Now, I find that objection quite problematic because there is one relatively basic principle of law, and it's not limited to international law, by the way. It's valid in every legal system, which says that no one should be allowed to take benefit from their own wrong. So if you do something wrong, you can't build a legal claim on your own wrong, right? That's a matter of good faith and honesty. So Israel has been doing everything to undermine the authority and effectiveness of the Palestinian Authority. So it can't be allowed to rely on a state of affairs of its own creation to deny that there is a Palestinian state. I think it's also important to bear in mind that the criteria I just mentioned are typically applied relatively flexibly in international practice. I will give you one example. So when Kuwait was invaded by Iraq in August 1990, and it remained under the Iraqi occupation for, I think, 7 months, something like this, during that period, nobody said that Kuwait disappeared. I mean, there was obviously no government. There was no government exercising effective control over its population. But we had plenty of resolutions, both by the Security Council and the United Nations General Assembly, keeping referring to Kuwait as if nothing happened. And there is good reason for it, because as a matter of international law, Kuwait did not disappear. So I think there is this support that comes from international law itself that can also remedy whatever deficiencies may exist in terms of effectiveness.
And is it legally permissible under international law to recognize Palestine as a state?
Again, I want to provide some context before answering this question, because the question of Palestinian statehood is not something simply invented by some pro-Palestinian activists. So I mentioned earlier the resolution of the General Assembly, Resolution 181, that was issued in 1947. That resolution already referred to the independent Arab and Jewish states, saying that they shall come into existence in Palestine. So this was contemplated in 1947, that there would be an Arab state. In 1974, the General Assembly issued an important resolution, Resolution 3236, recognizing the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination. Now, in international law, being recognized as the holder of the right to self-determination means something very important. It means, as this resolution specified, by the way, that the Palestinian people had the right to national independence and sovereignty. In 2003, the Security Council issued a resolution, Resolution 1515, endorsing a permanent two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. More recently, in 2024, last year, Security Council issued a resolution 2735 in which it reiterated its unwavering commitment to the vision of the two-state solution. So the concept of Palestinian state is grounded in international law documents from the beginning of the conflict between Israel and Palestine. So against that background, it's very difficult to see which rule of international law a state recognizing Palestine would breach. There may be circumstances in which a state recognizing another entity may be in breach of international law. I can give you an example. For instance, if part of an existing state engages in secession and proclaims its independence, and another state recognizes its independence and sovereignty, I think there may be room for arguing that that state, the recognizing state, is in breach of the principle of non-interference in the internal affairs of that state. But Palestinian statehood is not an internal affair of Israel, right? And the right of the Palestinian people to independent and sovereign state has been recognized by the UN and other international bodies. So in these circumstances, I don't think that any state recognizing Palestine commits a breach of international law. By the way, we should keep in mind that right now, as we speak, 147 states have recognized Palestine. 147 out of 193, which is the total number of the UN members. As a rule of thumb, I would say that if the overwhelming majority of the international community openly and proudly does something, it's very unlikely that it is a breach of international law. By the way, we should also keep in mind that Palestine is already a member in some international organizations. For instance, it was admitted as a member to UNESCO. Mm-hmm. It is a party to the UN Genocide Convention, and you have to be a state to be a party to the UN Genocide Convention. So it joined the Genocide Convention in 2014. It is a party to the Rome Statute, establishing the International Criminal Court. So it joined that statute in 2014. 15. So there too, you have to be a state to be a party to the Rome Statute. So we have all these indications showing that the statehood of Palestine is not something that can be dismissed out of hand.
So just on the topic of countries that have already recognized Palestine, how might the recognition of France and other countries influence Palestine's chances of joining the United Nations?
So Palestine's status within the UN actually is relatively complex. So since 2012, Palestine has been an observer state. So that's the status of Palestine. Basically, it has the status of observer and basically attending the work of the UN General Assembly.
But has no voting rights.
Absolutely, yeah. No voting right. That's very important to emphasize, and no right to put forward candidates for various positions at the UN. Now, more recently, there have been some important developments. In last year, actually, in 2024, the General Assembly adopted a resolution in which it determined that the state of Palestine is qualified for membership in the United Nations. Now, it's important to provide some context for that resolution because it was adopted after Security Council rejected Palestine's bid for membership. So it was supported by 12 members of the Security Council, but the resolution was vetoed by the United States. Now, it's important to keep in mind that to be a member of the UN, so there is a provision in the UN Charter, Article 4, regulating the conditions of admission. So it says membership in the UN is open to all peace-loving states. It's a very peculiar terminology. Obviously, we have to keep in mind that it's a document postdating immediately the Second World War. All peace-loving states which accept the obligations contained in the present charter and in judgment of the organization are able and willing to carry out these obligations. So you have to be peace-loving. You have to accept the obligations under the charter. And in the judgment of the organization, you must be seen as able and willing to carry out those obligation. Now, formally, the admission is decided by the General Assembly, but there must be a recommendation by the Security Council. So it's a joint decision-making power. Until the Security Council agrees, which basically means that until the point when there is no veto exercised on that issue, Palestine's admission is going to be difficult. Now, what may change? I don't expect any change in the immediate future, especially with the current administration in the United States. But what may change is at the Security Council level is the non-permanent members might join even in a greater majority and support that initiative.
And what would be the concrete benefits of UN membership for Palestine?
I think obviously it's going to have a huge symbolic value, right? Being a full member of the UN is going to basically send the signal that there is no doubt about the statehood of Palestine. It has been accepted as a member of the United Nations. But I think there will be some concrete benefits as well. As we mentioned earlier, right now, Palestine doesn't have the voting right and doesn't have the right to put forward candidates for various important positions at the UN. Obviously, once it becomes a member of the UN, it will possess those rights exactly as any other member of the UN.
And Fouad, my last question for you, might possibly the hardest one to answer. Could recognizing Palestine help advance peace efforts between Israel and Palestine?
It's difficult to see any prospect for peace between Israel and Palestine as long as Benjamin Netanyahu and his coalition remain in power. But I assume nobody is going to live forever, and I assume it's very likely that Netanyahu might end up in jail in the corruption case that has been in investigation for quite some time. Now, what the massive recognition of Palestine by the international community could help with is, and I think it is an important help, is the realization that Palestine and the people of Palestine are not going away. They are not going anywhere, despite the best efforts of the current leaders of Israel to erase them from the surface of the earth. So recognition of the Palestine by the international community is a symbolic message to Israel that no matter how long it tries, the world will never accept the historic injustice of epic proportions that has been inflicted on the Palestinian people. And I think that is a great achievement in itself.
Fuad, thank you very much for your insights on this complicated topic. And thank you for joining us on this episode of What Matters Today.
Thanks so much for having me.
This podcast series is produced by the Geneva Graduate Institute Communications Team. For more information about the Institute, please visit our website at graduateinstitute.ch. I'm Dan Graham. Thanks for listening.